Turn to 1 Corinthians 13. I want to look at the thought again about good for nothing. The Lord said through Paul, we can do all these things, have all these things, but if we do not have love, it is good for nothing. It adds up to a big zero. Verse 3 will be our fault primarily. We'll take up some other verses in a minute. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. He says it's like a big, bad noise. You got by with about two or three services, you're going to have to hear it again. That is not refreshing. That is not edifying. That's irritating. And he said that's kind of like it is with all the good things we try to do. Are they good? Yeah. If they're good, they're good. But without love, they're not doing any good. Good for nothing. I've looked at the perception and the permanence and the prominence and the portrait and the perversion and the patience and the people of love. I'm going to look tonight at the proof of love. If we love somebody or something, there'll be evidence. There'll be some proof. And if we don't love, it'll be evident. And in these verses I want to look at tonight, he describes love. And there are several different subjects he talks about. And I have found out that if you aren't careful, you'll go off on those subjects and leave the focus or the subject he's on, which is love. So I want to try and say, stay focused on the fact that he is dealing with love. He describes it. The Bible does not define love, it describes love. And I understand that. Could you understand trying to describe a rose to someone, to explain the curves and the beauty and the color and the fragrance? Well, you could, but it'd be a whole lot better to display the rose, to reveal it, to show it. And that's what he's talking about in these verses. You can explain a sunset. You could define it and tell what it is. And tell about all the colors and the reasons for the sunset. Or you can just show someone a sunset. And instead of defining it, describe it or display it. Well, that's what the Lord does through Paul. He displays love. And what he wants us to do is look at ourselves and see if these things are true of our lives to determine whether we love or not. Paul is not writing to perfect people. He didn't have any perfect people to write to. And we are not perfect in ourselves today. He was writing to flawed and failing fleshly people. In fact, the second most carnal church in the New Testament is who he was writing to. And he is saying these things to us who are also flawed and failing and sometimes fleshly. He is speaking to a church who is living in a rotten world, and we are also. But he says no matter what the world does, no matter what you do, love doesn't change. It's a wonderful thing. It's a revelation of a perfect God. A God who loves the wicked, but hates their wickedness. Loves the sinner, but hates their sin. And he's talking to people who are living in this world, in this life. And that's us today. The Christian life is not a bunch of robots obeying a bunch of rules written in a book. At least it's not supposed to be. It is people actually living all day, every day, listen, among people. And that means there's going to be stress, there's going to be problems, there's going to be difficulties. But one thing for sure, true Bible love, listen to this, is one of the things, perhaps the most important thing, that makes a Christian life attractive to those who are lost. My background is in a church. I was raised in a church. I don't ever remember them talking about being saved. They probably did. I just probably didn't listen, but I don't remember talking about being saved, talking about being good and all that stuff. So that was my first part of being exposed to the religious world. And then we moved up here, and one of my friends' mom and dad got saved, and I would go with them to Pine Grove Baptist Church, and Brother Buddy Fox would lay down the law and preach the gospel, so I got exposed to that. And then other churches throughout the area somewhat. And then my other exposure to what I would call the Christian life was down in Atlanta when I was living on the streets, and what I call Jesus freaks came up and told me about the gospel, and I saw in them a love that I had never seen before. So I have a mixture of all this stuff in my mind and head, from the somewhat sparse beginning to the somewhat strict, to the what I would probably call liberal, but love. So I didn't hardly know what Christianity was about. But I do know this, the love that I saw in those people in Atlanta that I thought was real, I think is real, it showed me that there's something to this Christian thing. And I believe that's one reason, I don't know if I ever get to the message, that's one of the reasons why the Lord emphasizes love so much, the importance of us loving each other, because we are lights and we are salt and we are displaying our Christian life every day. And Jesus said to love, and that's a great thing, but he also said to love our enemies, and that's a greater thing. Well, let's get to some verses. Look in verse 5. I'm talking tonight about the proof of love. He says, you want to know if you love or not? Here's the proof. Examine your life. See how you measure up. Charity doth not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. Charity doth not behave itself unseemly. Here's one of the negative things. I said he gives some positive aspects of love and some negative aspects of love. And here's what he's saying. This isn't love if you behave unseemly. That word unseemly is uncomely. Here's what it means. Rude. The person who is rude does not love. Now, I could take off a 1,000 miles an hour on the thing of rudeness, but he's saying if you're rude, it shows you don't love. So the issue is lack of love, not just rudeness. Oh, that's bad, but it's the lack of love. It means to be ill-mannered or to be abrupt or impolite. Christian love does not stomp around with combat boots on. Here's another point this talks about. This person listens without interrupting. Oh my, did you hear that, Rick? It talks about being respectful. It talks about that we are polite to others. Polite. If you care about that person, if you love them, you'll be polite to them. Do you love? Well, are you polite? Are you rude? Are you abrupt? Do you speak sharply? And Paul's talking about love in these verses. And we are to be respectful. No matter what the standing, whether they're rich or poor, smart or dumb, pretty or ugly, we are to be respectful. We're not to be unseemly. And if we are, we don't love. You see, love has a lot to do with our attitude. doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own. There's another negative thing. What love isn't, what love doesn't do. He's describing love. Seeketh not her own means selfish. Putting me first. Demanding its rights. Search your heart tonight. Search your heart and your motives for why you do what you do. I'm reminded of the serpent at Eve. And one of his ways to tempt her was offering to her something that he said would improve her and would bring her honor like God had. She said, "You'll be like God." And that desire to be honored, that desire to be first, that desire to be noticed, that desire to be recognized is still in the heart of every person who breathes air. But he says, if you love somebody, you don't want to be first, you want them first. You want to put them first. Man still seeks honor. And for us to not do that and love others, we'll have to take a work of God. True love rejects recognition, and true love rejects honor. Because if we love them, we want them to be recognized, and we want them to be first. You ever seen a mama with a little baby or little children? If they're a good one, they'll make sure the kids are taken care of first. And that's because she loves them. Me first, that's not love. Me first means I love me. I maybe need to reword that. Me first does mean love. It means I love me. And he said, if you seek your own, you don't love. Real love pushes the other person to the forefront. Rather have them exalted than self. Does not want to get the credit. Wants them to get the credit. True love does never put self first. If we think only of ourselves, we not only are not loving, but I promise us we will live a life of sadness. If we think only of ourselves, it is a sign I don't love anybody but me. But I also will live a life of sadness. I heard about a lady that was fairly well off. Her husband had died, and every month she would order flowers and have them sent to the graveyard. And the man there in charge would put the flowers on her husband's grave. Every month for years she did that. One day the man was out there in the graveyard working, and a large car pulled up with a chauffeur. He opened the door, and an old lady got out who could barely walk. And she said to that man who was working at the graveyard, "I've been sending these flowers for years, every single month, to show my husband I loved him. But this will be my last trip. I'm about to die. I have worn out. I am worn out, and I'm about to leave this world. And I want to bring the flowers today myself, because it'll be the last time they come." And the man of the graveyard said, "Lady, I'm thankful for the flowers. But it would have been so much better had you sent the flowers to somebody living. There's people in nursing homes. There's people in hospitals. There's people who have lost loved ones who would love to have flowers like that." And the little lady got in the car and they drove off. About 6 months later, that same car came pulling up, but instead of a chauffeur driving it, some lady was driving it. And she got out, and you could tell she was healthy, and even though she was aged. And that lady that had come before came up to the man again and said, "I listened to what you said. And I started taking flowers in nursing homes and hospitals and visiting people. And the Lord has given me a newfound strength and a newfound joy." Why? Because she started loving people instead of loving herself. That's what the Lord said, "For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many." Even the Lord put us first. Why? Because he loved us. He still loves us. It says of the Lord, "Who went about doing good." If we love ourselves, we won't love others. And we won't be happy, but we'll lose everything. Here's what the Bible said. He that loveth his life shall lose it. Again, if my love is on me, to where I'm living for me instead of others, I may have things and stuff. May have some fair weather friends, but I won't be happy. And I'll lose what real life is. Paul's talking about love. Notice on in verse 5, is not easily provoked. The word provoked means stirred. It means irritated. It means to excite to anger. It covers a spectrum here of one end to the other, of being overly sensitive to being abruptly angry at everything in between. We are not easily provoked. Now, it'd be so easy to light off on anger and talk about the bad things about anger and how it displeases God, and all those things would be true, but that's not what he's talking about. His focus is love. And he says if we love somebody, we'll be less prone to be angry with them. It'll be more difficult for us to be excited to anger or sensitive to what they say or do. We'll be less prone to be angry to what somebody we love has done or said. Now, there is a righteous indignation. There's no doubt about that. That's the same word. Here's the same word that we find here, provoked, in Acts 17, 16. Listen to this. Now, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred, there it is, in him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. Paul's spirit was stirred, provoked, same thing. He got angry because he saw the wickedness of the city, but that was a good anger. Jesus, when he cleansed the temple, no doubt he was angry. Controlled anger, yes, but he was angry. But most of our anger does not have to do with us cleansing a temple. Now, if you're cleansing a temple, go ahead and get angry. But if you're not, anger probably is going to be a negative thing. There is righteous indignation, but that's not what Paul's talking about, and that's not what I'm talking about. He says a person who loves, they are not easily provoked. It takes something to stir them up. It takes something to get them upset because they love the person so much. Do they do wrong? Sure they do. Do they hurt us? Sure they do at times. But if we love them, we're not going to be as prone to be angry toward them. We won't let our emotions take over. In fact, to be honest, when we get angry, a lot of times that is when we say what we really mean, what we really feel. We say, I didn't mean to say that, I was just mad. Well, more than likely when we get mad and just knock off all the boundaries and say what we feel like saying, that's probably usually what we really think. But sometimes we may regret what we say or do. And if we love somebody, we'll have a restraint on that anger. We won't lose control. It talks about really being quiet. Being quiet when we need to. Not speaking wrongly when we shouldn't. Because we love that person or those people. Now, there are some who seemingly go around with a chip on their shoulder. And they're just asking you to even think about, act like you're about to knock it off. I thought about this. Do people have to walk on eggshells around you because they're afraid they're going to upset you? Or they don't know how you're going to take what they say or do? That's what I'm talking about. A person who's easily provoked does not love others. They love themselves. Love doesn't lose control. We can be provoked by others' sins. In fact, Moses, why did he strike the rock the second time? Because of people. And they were doing wrong, and he got mad about it. But he overdid what he did and did the wrong thing because he got provoked by somebody's bad actions. Were they doing wrong? Yes, they were. Was he wrong? Yes, he was. We can be provoked by others' sins, but we also can be provoked by others' goodness. Remember Joseph's brothers? They got mad at him, not because he did something wrong, but because he was doing good. And his daddy seemingly liked him better than them. And they sold him, I'm telling you. And that's proof that they did not love him. So we can get provoked because of somebody's sins. By the way, that includes how they're treating us. Or we can get provoked by someone's goodness and be jealous and be angry. But if we love them, those things won't be so quick to happen. This thing of being provoked can be known or seen by our facial expressions. Remember Cain? God said, "Why has thy countenance fallen? What is wrong with you? I can see it in your face." Of course, he'd do it anyway. But this thing of being angry or being provoked is something that's so obvious, usually in our facial expressions or the tone of our voice. How we say what we say says what we are thinking and how we're feeling and how we love somebody. You can be abrupt to someone in as far as the words, but say it kindly and brokenhearted, and it shows you love. I'm talking about not easily provoked, not easily stirred, not easily angered, not easily upset. We can show our anger by our facial expressions and by our tone of voice, but also by our actions, how we treat people. And we need to just realize if these things are true of us, we need to stop excusing ourselves and saying, "That's the way I am." I know, but we're all dirty, rotten sinners and headed to hell without Jesus. But I hope you didn't stay that way. We all, Paul's writing to a bunch of corrupt people. And he said to these corrupt people, "You still need to love." And I'm not saying you just plumb corrupt or me either, I hope, but we sure need to love. Not easily provoked. The world excuses anger, endorses anger. Pay them back, hit them hard. Rambo, come on. And Dirty Harry, make my day. But God doesn't. And it's amazing how we can excuse our anger. Remember what Jonah did? God said, "Doest thou good to be angry?" Jonah said, "Yes, sir, right. Yep, boy, you're right, God. I do have a right to be angry because of the gourd and the worm." Well, no, he didn't. We excuse our anger because of what's been done to us or said to us. But according to the Bible, there is no excuse. And the Bible also says that we're to handle our anger, our wrath, quickly. "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath," your anger, your hostility. Why? Because it'll grow. It'll grow to resentment. It'll grow to bitterness. And then you got a real problem. And all this deals with loving people. If we really love them, we will not be so easily provoked. And that's why the Bible talks about, he warns us about being angry or even hanging around angry people. Proverbs 22, verse 24, "Make no friendship with an angry man." Proverbs 29, 22, "An angry man stirreth up strife." And that's why he said, stay away from angry people because they're going to make you angry. We need to ask ourselves, do we love? I believe this with all my heart. Anger is more destructive than lust. Lust is so destructive. You look at all the world and all the problems in churches, so many of them, and how they deal with lust and the flesh. But anger is more destructive than lust, because anger will destroy a church. Anger will destroy a family. Anger will destroy a person quicker than anything else. More marriages are destroyed. More churches are defeated. More lives are wrecked over anger than anything else. Dissatisfaction. I thought about this. Hell is a place of anguish. It's a place of terrible pain. But it's also a place of anger. Everybody's mad at everybody there because there is no love of God. Well, it's not easily provoked. The next thing, thinketh no evil. We're still in verse 5. Doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. What's he talking about with love? He says, love doesn't think the worst thing first. Love is not suspicious and thinks that they're guilty of something when we don't know. Love says, I believe they're innocent, and I'll have to be proven that they're guilty before I believe it because I love them. Not because of some gullible thinking, but because if we really love them, we'll think the best. Until it's proven wrong, I'm going to think the best, and I surely want the best. They've been accused of something wrong. I don't want it to be true. I don't want it to be true. I don't want them to have said that or done that or think that. I don't want them to. I love them. I don't want the worst. I want the best for them. That includes thinking about their motives and thinking they're doing wrong things for wrong reasons. We don't know their heart. So thinketh no evil. Then in verse 6, he's talking about love, what love is and what love isn't, positive and negative. Love, charity, rejoiceth not in iniquity. Rejoiceth not in iniquity. It means to be glad or rejoice because of wrong things. In iniquity, well, how in the world can that happen? I think we can rejoice about our sin. And I hope we don't do this. But have you ever been around lost people at a break room? And they're saying, man, I got so drunk last night, I couldn't even walk. I don't know how in the world I got home. I don't even remember what I did, but I know I had a good time, and everybody laughs. They're rejoicing about iniquity. And remember, we're talking about love. We're not just talking about somebody got drunk. That's bad. But we're talking about if you love them, it breaks your heart. It doesn't rejoice at iniquity. You can't laugh with them that they did wrong or they're doing wrong. It doesn't rejoice in evil. It doesn't rejoice in iniquity. It can be true about our sin, but it can be true about others' sins. They've fallen, and somehow we get some pleasure out of it. That church is struggling, and somehow we're glad. That person failed, and we think, well, I knew they would. There's something wrong about them. I had suspicions about them the whole time. That's not love. Thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, does not rejoice in the fact that others are doing wrong. Any sin, ours or others, ought to break our heart. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Here's a positive. Rejoiceth in the truth. He's talking about the truth is the Word of God and the things the Word of God teaches and commands and what the Bible says. And when we see someone walking according to the Word, if we love them, we're so glad. And if they're not, it breaks our heart. It rejoiceth in the truth. John said, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. People he had maybe even led to the Lord, people he had preached to and helped and ministered to and discipled, and now they're walking with the Lord. He is thrilled. Why? Because he loves them. He loves them. 2 John verse 4, I rejoice greatly that I found the children walking in truth as we have received a commandment from the Father. He said, I rejoice because I heard you were walking in the truth. You were obeying the Father. Walking in the truth means obeying God's commands, doing right. And if we love them, we're thrilled. It excites us. Don't you love it? I tell you, I know some people that they're so excited about walking with God. And every time I get around them, I see their face and hear the words, and it's so exciting. Living according to Scripture, interested in the spiritual state of others. That's what love is. Now, we as parents and grandparents ought to be interested in the careers and the life and the lifestyle and the marriages and all that's in the future of our children and grandchildren. But above anything else, should not be popularity or riches or even health. It ought to be their spiritual condition. It talks about rejoicing in the truth, being glad that somebody's walking with God. And if we love them, we'll be glad. Verse 7, still talking about charity. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Here's the four alls of love. Beareth all things. It means to bear up despite a difficulty. To bear up in spite of difficulty about somebody we love. Sometimes you just got to bear up. It's not easy to love some people. It has the idea of covering in silence, of putting up with it, of not attacking, not rebuking. Sometimes we should rebuke, but there are many times we should bear up. If we love them, we'll bear up. We'll give them the right of way. In this day, everything's known. Something happened here, all the way around the world, you can see it immediately with satellites and TV and Facebook and phones and texting and all that. But this talks about something that you know about somebody and you shush it down. Because you don't want their reputation soiled. You don't want them hurt even further. It means to put up with. That's why 1 Peter 4:8 says, charity shall cover a multitude of sins. It does not mean we okay their sin or say it's okay or no problem. We don't condone their sin, but we love them enough to bear it, to carry it with them, and even be quiet about it, to forgive them. Stephen, when he was dying, asked the Lord to forgive the ones that were stoning him. So did Jesus. So important. Then verse 7 again, believeth all things. I'm trying to hurry so I can get through with at least this verse. Charity believeth all things. Again, not suspicious, not to think the worst thing first, not to believe the bad until there's proof. It's connected with the other. Not to see the negative. Doesn't mean to ignore the negative, but it means to see the positive more than the negative. It's kind of like a gardener. He sees the weeds, but he also sees the plants. He sees the weeds, but he sees the tomato plants and the corn. And that's what, when we love, we believe the best of people. We know they're not perfect. We know they mess up. We know there's some things that are bad about them and wrong about them, but we still see the best. We believe the best for them. Someone has said, we glance at the good in others and glare at the bad. I agree with that. Paul started almost every one of his epistles, if not all of them, with a compliment. In other words, he saying, there's some good things about you. Bad things? Oh, I'll get to them. But there's some good things. He loved them. And then verse 7 also, hopeth all things. Means to expect the best. To expect the best. To believe they're going to improve. To believe because I love them. I got to believe the best because I love them. I can't tolerate them not getting better. I can't tolerate them not improving. I'm not going to give up. It's similar with faith. But hope means I see ahead. Someday they're going to get better. Things are going to get better. That's why 2 Corinthians 10:15 says, but having hope when your faith is increased. He said, I'm believing your faith's going to increase. Means their faith needed to be increased. Means they're not believing God now, but he says, I'm trusting because I love you that your faith's going to increase. And that's what love is. Believeth all things, hopeth all things. I expect the best. I'm hoping for the best. I'm trusting God for the best. And then also endureth all things. love enough to endure the pain. Did you hear what he said? Endureth. Well, now I want to just tell you something. If I was young and getting married, I wouldn't want the word endureth in my wedding vows. Endureth, endureth. I don't want to be enduring. I want love. I want joy. I want kisses and hugs and fairy tale romance. And here he's talking about love, and he says endure. You know why? Because sometimes loving people isn't easy. And sometimes there's lopsided relationships, not just in spouses, but in friendships. And to be honest, you're loving more than they're loving, and you're giving more than they're giving, and that ain't easy. And he says, if you love them, you'll endure it. You'll face it. You'll stick with it. It means to endure. And that ought to make sense, because after all, this is a battle we're in. This thing of loving others may be one of the biggest battles we ever have with the devil in our flesh. So we got to endure it. It's a good word. Endure all things. Loving isn't easy. Jesus looked over Jerusalem and wept. He said, you've slain the prophets I've sent to you. And you rejected me. But how many times would I have just welcomed you in my arms? I would forgive you now. That's enduring all things. That's what Jesus did. I believe with all my heart we could go through these verses and replace Jesus for the word charity. Look in verse 4. Let's do it real quick. Jesus suffereth long and is kind. Jesus envieth not. Jesus fondeth not himself, and he was not puffed up. He did not behave himself unseemly. He striketh not his own. He was not easily provoked. He thought no evil. He rejoiced not in iniquity, but rejoiced in the truth. He bore all things and believed all things and hoped all things and endured all things. Jesus never failed. I wonder, I know I could put Jesus there, but I wonder if I can put me. I know I can't. Look in verse 8, I'm done. Charity never faileth. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. My thought is on these three words, charity never faileth. That does not mean it always wins. You ask the mama and daddy standing beside a grave of a son that walked away from God, and it cost him his life. Did they love him? Sure. But that didn't mean they won. You look at a wife that's brokenhearted because her husband ran off with somebody else. Did she love him? Yeah. But that doesn't mean she won. Reverse that. You look at parents that look at children that have walked away. Do they love them? Sure they do. But that doesn't mean that won. It does not mean that love always wins, because sometimes love isn't enough. It's all we got, the best we got. And it'll work more than anything else. But love, what he's saying here, never fails. The flowers will wither, fade, and fall away, but not love. One who loves continues to love. They don't give up when others do. One of the major reasons, humanly speaking, that I'm saved tonight, because of my mama. I believe with all my heart, everybody who knew me gave up on me, including me, but she didn't. I bet there was plenty of times she felt like giving up, but she didn't, because she loved me. And love never fails. Love never quits. The one who is loving is the happiest, and I believe the healthiest. And the person who doesn't love will never be happy and never be spiritual and never please God. I close with this verse, Romans 13, 8. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. Let's stand together.